Radio Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Beacon Hill has a marvelous habit of giving the driest, wonkiest names to the most important concepts. Today's case in point, the foundation budget formula. I know you're all yawning already, right? Well, in non-policy speak, we're talking about money for schools, state funds for Massachusetts K through 12 to be exact. The foundation budget formula is the tool first created a quarter century ago to determine exactly how much each city and town ought to be spending on their schools and how much money the state will chip in. And as I said, the formula has been the same for about 25 years. But today, on Beacon Hill, in the Senate, the foundation budget formula could come a step closer to a major overhaul, which could drive hundreds of millions more dollars into education funding. For the latest on this, we're joined now by WBUR Edify reporter Max Larkin. He's at the State House. Hello, Max.
Hi, Meghna.
So, it sounds like, are you in a hallway in the State House right now?
I am
now?
In a hallway. I am definitely in a hallway, yes.
You have stepped away from some action that's going on in the Senate. So, what's happening on Beacon Hill right now?
Yes, everything's running a little late, but in effect, what's happening is a chorus of senators are coming forward and saying, it's about time we fix the foundation budget. This is that important formula that sets the minimum, and while I stepped into the hallway, it was Republican Senate Minority Leader Bruce Tarr who was saying it's about time for this reckoning. So no one said a bad word about the bill or the idea of spending more or raising the estimate of the cost of education. It seems like a pretty unanimous body.
Oh, okay, interesting. So the key thing here, though, is that this upgrade or update or modernization of the foundation budget formula would essentially end up saying that there's a shortage of funding for schools in Massachusetts. I mean, how much of a shortage are we talking about?
It could be quite substantial. By one estimate of the Mass Budget and Policy Center, they had it at about $2 billion, and that was now a number of years ago. What's really driving it, we believe, is that the rising cost of health care. As most Americans, many business owners know, that's really dramatically outpaced the growth of many, many other commodities, and certainly outpaced inflation, which is what they had pegged it to back in 1993. So many districts are spending twice as much or more on health insurance as they expected to back in 1993, and that means they've had to cut in other places.
I see. So just to reiterate what you're saying, the foundation budget formula, it pegs this baseline cost for what the state would believe is a quality education in Massachusetts cities and towns. And if this change does become official, still has to go through the House, but if it becomes official, that baseline is going to could be raised by as much as $2 billion. All right. So what would that change then mean for school districts?
Well, if you think about a rich district like, say, Newton or Weston, they're already spending out of their own coffers well above what the state requires them to spend, partly because they want to have good schools. They've got a lot of property taxes. They're not getting a ton of state aid. It's just a community priority. So this bill wouldn't amount to a huge change for them. It would mean a little more state aid. But for communities that are just barely being able to pay this minimum amount, even with a lot of state aid, namely the poorer gateway communities, Lynn, Lawrence, it could really make a big difference there. It would mean the state is taking on a lot more responsibility in terms of dollars and cents for what's going on in those districts. And, you know, right now the gallery in the temporary Senate chamber is full of people from Brockton being the community at the center of so much ed reform agitation in this state for many years now. And I spoke to one teacher who was sitting there, Joanna Schnitz. She's been teaching in the district, an English teacher at the high school, for 6 years. She's been laid off in five of those years, only to be rehired. She told me that was a function of just not having enough money to provide even really committed teachers with job security.
They don't have the money to do it, to pay for me and for my colleagues, and they lose a lot of good teachers that way. So it does taint the experience a bit when you want to feel like you're part of the community and really give it your all, but you know that if you the longer you invest, as you're investing all your energy, the reward for it is a layoff at the end.
So we are talking about the potential for significant new state funding, as we were saying, Max, to cities and towns that need it most for their schools. But where would the money come from?
I think that's a little bit of an open question. This bill isn't entirely passed yet. It represents, and the language of duty was something that those various senators were using on both sides of the aisle. This is something we have to do. So it means it'll make, you know, there'll probably be some hard budgetary choices. I think one thing that the lead sponsor, Sonia Chang-Diaz, is admittedly looking forward to a little bit is that millionaire's tax that may be passed by Massachusetts voters on the ballot in November. That could generate a kind of windfall that would make a lot of these decisions a lot easier. I spoke with Kathleen Smith. She's the superintendent down in Brockton, and she says she does hear from some people who are concerned about this funding issue. We could hear a little bit of tape from that, please.
I think there's concerns about funding, and believe me, when you look at that commission and the recommendations really covered a wide range of funding. You're talking everything from all budget busters, special education, health insurance, inflation rates, transportation, you know, regional schools, you know, stresses on a budget for rural schools.
Max, go ahead.
I think Superintendent Smith's point there is these are things that we are absolutely committed to seeing districts do. So it is something that we see, you know, back to our 1780 Constitution, Vegna, as something absolutely essential to the character of Massachusetts. So we have to make those choices, in other words.
But as you were saying a little earlier, Max, thus far in the Senate debate over changes to the foundation budget formula, you haven't heard any dissenters.
There's actually nothing. I think 36 out of 38 sitting senators have co-sponsored this bill, so it's nearly unanimous that this has to get done.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens in the Senate and then later on in the House, of course. That's WBUR Edify reporter Max Larkin speaking to us from Beacon Hill about the foundation budget formula, also, you know, a.k.a. major school funding reform, conversation about that going on in the Senate. Thank you so much, Max.
Thanks, Megna.
All right. Well, let's turn now to Senator Karen Spilka. She is a senator from Ashland. She's also chair of the Ways and Means Committee in the Senate, and she is going to be, soon to be, the new president of the Massachusetts State Senate. She stepped away from this conversation in the Senate chamber to talk with us. Senator Spilka, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Good afternoon. Thanks for inviting me.
I'm really glad to have you, and I appreciate, again, that you're stepping away from debate in the Senate about the foundation budget formula to talk with us. So appreciate your time. I mean, first of all, tell me about your view of these proposed changes to the foundation budget formula. I mean, you've been calling for a long time for some ed funding reform in Massachusetts.
Right. And you just hit the nail on the head. My springboard back in 2001, 2002 was I ran for the legislature to change the education funding formula at the time. I ran for school committee, was on it in the late 1998-99, formed a statewide coalition using my background in conflict resolution to form a statewide coalition that we called the Chapter 70 Roundtable to come up with principles. And we came up with the principles of change for increasing adequacy, equity, predictability, and making the formula simpler. And we filled that in with substance, and then we started meeting with legislators to change the funding formula. In late 2001, my state rep resigned, and I thought, wow, I could make better changes from within the state house than from outside. And that was why I made the decision originally to run for the legislature.
And so do you think
so it's a real pleasure.
Yeah, I was just going to say, do you think this new bill adequately covers the concerns that people have had with the foundation budget formula?
I think it is a huge step. I think, the 1993 ed funding formula was created. It was what was seen as landmark at the time. We made some changes in 06 and 07. It addressed the last three of the four principles that I just mentioned, the equity, predictability, and it did make it simpler, although it's still really complex. But the adequacy piece, the piece that our Constitution says that each child must have an adequate education, eluded us. And over this last quarter of a decade, since 93, so much has changed in education. We did not fund really much of health care, if at all. And health care, just like on the state budget, is eating up more and more of a district's budget. We did not look into, you know, what should have been the true costs of special education and English language learner and low-income students and other areas. So the Foundation Budget Review Commission's recommendations gives us a much better idea of what does it cost to adequately educate our child. And
Senator,
we clearly want to have equality.
Senator Spilka, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I wanted
That's
to just
okay.
jump in quickly and ask you, Discussion around these two major factors, healthcare and special ed, and how the foundation budget formula is lagging behind reality has been going on for years now, right? There was the Foundation Budget Formula Review Committee report from several years ago. It basically came up with the same conclusions, but it didn't go anywhere. What's different now that's allowed the bill to advance as far as a full Senate debate that's different from, you know, several years ago when people first started talking vigorously about this?
Just like, you know, in 99, when I started forming the Roundtable Coalition, it took several years to build up critical mass to make the 06-07 changes. And then the same thing happens with this. The formula is so complex and it hits each different and, each district differently. So if you change one little thing, it impacts one district very differently than another. And it takes a while for all of the districts, I think, to better understand what these changes mean and how it would impact them. So there is the priority. I think the whole legislature and the Senate, I can speak on behalf of the Senate, we have passed this bill. We've included it when we did the RISE Act for charter reform as well. Mm-hmm. We've included it in the budgets. It is time. The districts are hurting and we need to start implementing, which we do in the budget that we just, you know, unveiled today.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the key question, though. You're right to have mentioned that the changes were previously proposed in budgets of several years past, but they kept getting removed. They were cut out. So I guess what I'm saying is, how do you anticipate running into the brick wall that is Robert DeLeo and House leadership when it comes to finding the several billion dollars we might be talking about here in changes that would come with the foundation budget formula?
Well, I know the members of the House have a desire to do this as well. Everybody, you know, the reps, senators, we're all hearing from our school districts, our constituents. We all know kids and have cities and towns that are hurting because of the formula at this point in time. I know Alice Peisch, the state rep, who's chair of the Education Committee, as well as Sonia Chang Diaz, the senator, have worked really, really hard on this bill. So a lot of it is, how do we fund this? The House also begins to implement it. The governor did, the beginning of healthcare and health insurance costs. The House did health insurance costs. That is one of the four major recommendations of the Foundation Budget Review Commission. So there is the intent, even, you know, through the governor, through the House, to begin to implement this. The Senate takes some extra funds and starts implementing the English language learner piece. So we add another piece to this to continue to fund this. And we will continue to work on it. And I believe the House will also. We need to come up with a consistent stream of revenue to truly implement this in a full phase-in that is consistent and systematic.
And so what would be the parts of that revenue stream? Where would that stream begin?
Well, right now it's beginning just through the budget, just like the Senate has prioritized to take, you know, but it's all choices. Each line item in the budget are priorities of the Senate and our values. We are clearly putting a value on education. Yeah. It's our future. It's, you know, our kids are our future and we need to invest in our future. So we take some extra funding and put it towards implementing the Foundation Budget Review Commission's recommendations. We put some to increasing the special ed circuit breaker and funding that at the full level, and a little more for charter school reimbursement as well, with recognition that we need to continue to invest. But we can't do it at the level that we actually need. And that's where the Fair Share Amendment, or what's sometimes called the Millionaire's Tax, would provide $1 billion every year just for education funding. Yeah.
So it seems, I mean, there's other issues in the Senate that I want to talk to you about, but it seems as if there's a lot of consensus around the need for reform around this funding formula, but many unanswered questions that you're going to have to get to over time in terms of where the new revenues are going to come from. So we'll keep our eyes on that. But I do want to ask you, you're going to take over the presidency of the Senate at the end of July. The Senate as a body on Beacon Hill right now is a wounded institution because of the fallout from what has happened with former Senator Stan Rosenberg and his now estranged spouse, Brian Hefner, and the sexual harassment allegations that have been really roiling the Senate for many months now. I'm curious, what impact do you think, from your view, has all of this had on the Senate as a body?
I do want to start out by saying that we have continued to do the people's work, and we have met every single week other than the two vacation weeks, and we have done bills. We have been as productive as prior years, if not more so. You know, Ways and Means, the other members have been working really hard to do that. I do believe, though, as well, that the Senate has some healing to do after these last few months. I am acutely aware of it, and I believe that we need to ensure that every single member, every staff member, every member of the public, for whatever reason they come into the Senate, knows that this body, this state house, is a warm, welcoming, safe place to be. And we will work with Senator Joan Lovely. Next week, we'll be unveiling the Sexual Harassment Committee's work with some recommendations on what changes maybe to our policy or what more we can do. There are things we need to change the culture. It's as simply as that. This, any behavior that even hints of unwelcoming or disrespectful behavior is just not welcome here, not wanted in the state house, will not be accepted. So I look forward to working with my colleagues in the Senate and members and listening to hear what more we can do, how we can help to change the culture, how we can maybe work with the House and the administration and really make the state house a warm and welcoming, safe and respectful environment.
Well, just to remind folks the reason why this is such a important top of mind issue for the Massachusetts State Senate. I just want to play some tape here from last week. This is Committee Chair Michael Rodriguez saying that this is the Ethics Committee Chair saying that former Senator Rosenberg did in not acting on what he knew his husband was doing, that he did tarnish the Senate as an institution.
Senator Rosenberg undermined the goal of the Senate's anti-harassment policy to promote a workplace free from sexual and other forms of discriminatory harassment because he knew or should have known that Hefner had racially and sexually harassed Senate employees and failed to address the issue adequately.
Senator Spilka, I wanted to play that because there's also this issue of rules that were in place that weren't followed. So what assurance can you give Senate staffers, Beacon Hill lobbyists, who the people who come in and out of that building every day, that any new rules would be any more effective?
We will look at our rules when we review them in January again, when we have to adopt the Senate rules. Nothing is off the table at this point. We will look at every possibility, as I said, that has the goal of making the Senate a warm, welcoming, and respectful place to work, to visit, to do business, for whatever reason people come, for interns, for anybody. I think it's really important. So we will take another look at our rules, our policies, look at what else we can do to be more open and transparent in what we are doing as well. Hmm. You know, I think that I need some time to meet with people and hear and listen to what they think might be a good thing to bring to the Senate.
Is this going to be a priority of yours when you become Senate president?
It's definitely one of my top priorities.
Okay. And then
definitely.
And then what can you, we've just got a minute here. What are going to be some of your other top priorities?
Well, you know, I do believe that I want to implement a collaborative form. My background as a social worker, as a labor and employment attorney, arbitrator, mediator is very collaborative. I want to have institute a more collaborative Senate where people are working together, have mentoring from veteran senators to new senators, and to make some changes with that as well. And to implement some of the areas of education. I think, you know, again, the Foundation Budget Review Commission, we need to keep looking at that bill, looking at how we implement transportation so that every area of the state has the transportation and infrastructure they need, continue with opioid and substance abuse, but blend more mental health issues into that as well. So there's lots of areas and lots of issues. And I'm looking forward to meeting with all of my colleagues and hearing their priorities.
Well, Senator Karen Spilka is expected to take over the Senate presidency in July. Senator Spilka, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.